Time, weather, and...
Welcome to the Jay and Pav Podcast Experience.
You're listening to The Che and Pav Show, Teachers Talking Teaching.
Where two middle school teachers sharing our reflections, insights about the topics that matter the most in the classroom. So hey, Pav, join us in the hallway or even the parking lot, or better yet, how about the staff room?
Welcome to episode 119 of the Che and Pav Show. Thank you for joining us as we sit around the table to talk teaching. In this episode, we will have a conversation about performative social justice work. Yes, you heard me right. Can our performative actions be a positive gateway to doing the work? I'm interested to see where this one goes. But before we can get into the content, we have a few things that we need to check off our list. Get it? Check off our list. I'll start by introducing myself. My name is Pav Wander, and I'm half of the hosting team of the Che and Pav Show. My co-host likes to introduce himself through comedy, so let's humor him and give him his 5 minutes of fame.
Since when did you become so funny to start the episodes? Because Pav's a brick house. And Che's the shed in the back corner that we keep the lawnmowers in that we never discard. And they're just a accumulation of more and more lawnmowers and bits and pieces. And that's where you'll find me.
Hi, Che.
And when you said Chekhov, I immediately almost went into Captain Kirk mode.
Mm.
But you've thrown me off because you usually don't try to be funny. And then it threw me off because I've actually found you funny, and we know that you can check that off the list. I have a problem with the fact that I find nobody funny.
Right, but we've already covered this. You do find me funny, and I have made it my life's work to make you laugh.
Three times.
And when I succeed, it brings me so much joy. And so I can tell by the look on your face that you actually found me funny today. And so there, that's it. It's done. I checked it off my list. Good night, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show.
I've been totally, you know, flustered. Not the first time this month.
No.
Pav, thanks for that wonderful introduction.
I like your giggles. They're fun.
Who am I recording this podcast episode with? Who is taking over here? You are the foundation of these episodes. I'm the one that weaves in and around the straight path you're taking us on. And now you are all over the place. I'm like, does this change my responsibility by making me having to become more responsible? Because that's not really the role I can do in this dynamic.
Like, I don't know. I guess I'm just in a giddy mood tonight.
When I say we have a great webpage, I really mean Pav puts together a great webpage.
Yeah.
I just look at it and Pav goes, make me some art for this.
Yes.
And then you create this.
That's essential. That's essential. I couldn't do it without the artwork. Like, I do the minion work. You have the creative edge in everything that we do. So let's remember how this team works.
I'm letting that sink in. Mm-hmm. Che has the creative edge. Actually, I'm going to jot this down on my notes because I'll forget it. But then I don't need to jot it down on my notes because we're recording it, so I can just go and listen to it back.
Yeah.
Pav, we took some really important data recently about the start of our episodes and whether banter was crucial.
Yeah.
And although I said we took some data, I really wasn't looking for data and I didn't care what the data was. We were going to keep the banter going anyways.
Absolutely.
But it was wonderful to hear Holly and Josie jump in right away about the value of the banter. And it actually reminded me of Ralph Nader, a podcast we listened to, when he was talking about the power of radio over podcasts, mm-hmm. that there is a distinct difference. And radio tends to be locally driven, and you build community relationships.
Yes.
You build that relationship with your audience. And a podcast, there's still a relationship, but it's not the same. Yeah. And so the banter becomes a space to maybe try to create that local radio show energy to feel like you're here. And if you are listening right now, you can come over right away. There's two empty chairs here in mm-hmm. our studio. Mm-hmm. And of course, we often joke, we just record in the kitchen, but it's not a joke.
Yeah.
We record in the kitchen.
We actually, that's where we record. That's where we can yeah. only record.
I got the deep fryer going right now.
It's an air fryer. It's not a deep fryer.
The things are fried, right?
It's air fried. So it's like a convection oven. It's not really frying.
So they're super fried.
You keep calling it a deep fryer. I do not have a deep fryer. It's an air fryer. And it works gloriously. Everything that you eat.
The oven in this kitchen has not been turned on in 7 years.
I have not turned on my oven since I got my air fryer. It's magic. It's magic. Everybody, confirm it, please.
I'll make this a commercial later on. We are sponsored by air fryers. Let me, while you talk, I'm going to turn around and look and see what the brand is.
don't say it on air.
Why? We could cash in. Maybe they'll start sending us 3 or 4 of these. We could give them away on social media.
Christmas is coming up. That is true.
And Jay and Pav, what are they called now? Air fryers?
Air fryers.
This doesn't have the same je ne sais quoi when it goes off the tongue. Air fryer.
Yeah.
Deep fryer.
No.
Air. Deep.
Okay.
Air.
Sure.
Deep. Undercover. Reminds me of Eddie Murphy and Beverly Hills Cop 2.
It's a Ninja, by the way. I got it from Costco and it's magnificent. It was my 40th birthday present from my mom.
Why do you lie?
What? That's not a lie. This is the actual truth.
40? Please, oh, okay. Get out of here.
Okay.
Get your nonsense. Why do you turn this podcast into a cathedral of lies?
Complimentary. Yes, everyone, I am 40 plus.
I'm 50.
Yes.
I will be for 9 years. I round up and then I wait till I get high enough to round again.
I hope you're all enjoying this banter, by the way.
Yeah, because the votes were in. We stick with the banter. It was one of those questions, Pav, that, you know, I didn't really need to be told again that we shouldn't have the banter. The banter stays.
The banter stays. Because, you know, it is actually, it's a great time for us to just connect as well. Because
you're so busy on the air fryer.
Everybody is very busy in their lives. And sometimes this is the intentional excuse, the intentional reason that we have to sort of connect about these silly things and be a little bit silly. Why not? It's a lot of fun. I love to hear other people being silly. And when you were talking about, you know, that connection between podcast and radio show, a lot of radio show hosts will record podcasts either after their radio show airs or just take their radio show and put it on as a podcast, because people really do enjoy listening to that back and forth. It's funny, it's entertaining, and it does feel like you were just right there. You get a little bit of insight into people's lives and you feel like you know them, you feel like you're friends with them. I enjoy it and I think that there's value to it. We don't always get that kind of time to decompress with our friends and chit chat about just everyday things and talk about the air fryer that we got for, you know, my birthday. How many times can you say that becomes a part of your conversation and you've intentionally made it part of the conversation and we had a few laughs about it. So why not? Yeah, it stays. The banter stays.
As you were talking, Pav, it reminded me, you know, as we've both shifted to new jobs, still mm-hmm. teaching, it takes on a different phase because we're in different grades, different spaces, different teachers. And we could never say they were our spaces. Although I think our own learning had sort of manifested that we didn't really own the spaces we were teaching in anyways.
Right.
And as you were talking, I was thinking about the last 2 weeks, lots of highs and lows, lots of emotions. And I was thinking what's been one of the best things was actually just a conversation I had with a teacher whose room I haven't been in, but we've passed a few times here or there. And it was just a 10-minute conversation in the hallway. And we were talking about pedagogy and, you know, trying to absorb as much knowledge as you could and understanding that there's tons of stuff out there, and just got a little bit of insights into what makes each other tick. Mm-hmm. And we started to talk about goal setting and how important it was for our students to have goals rooted in responsibility or rooted in something of value, and trying to make sure that we were opening up our students' self-awareness to set goals, to be proactive in their goal setting, to know what's out there, to know what they want to be. And it was like a meshing of the minds. And it was a great conversation, but it wasn't, you know, the principal providing release time to go and plan and talk. It wasn't a plan, I'll come into your room at 9:15 and we can do this. No, it was just organic conversation in the hallway at lunch. And I come back and said, in the last 2 weeks, not that I want to make a hierarchy of events, but it was certainly one of the real positive events that gave me a little bit of, you know, juice in this new role. Because, you know, as I joked last time, I'm one of those TikTok Mike Tysons. Like, I feel like I get punched in the face all the time. And so it's been picking and choosing the highs and the lows. But it's been very humbling, because I think I got so used to so many successes that I think I projected on other folks that maybe they were having as many successes. And so you should be able to do what I do without me saying you should do what I do.
Right.
Because I can bring this certain energy, or I'm invigorated by the energy around me. But maybe in the last, I don't know how many weeks I've been in this job, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, that energy's not as consistent. It's not as predictable.
Right.
And so it's tougher to go into work every day when you're not totally certain the type of energy and vibe and communication, conversation, and tasks you're going to do. Yeah. When those days are different all the time, there's a different vibe to going to build, the less predictability. So it's been a little eye-opening for me to maybe assume, although I don't think I ever outwardly said, you should be feeling the way I feel about teaching, but I think maybe my content, I didn't know enough about what other teachers are going through in other spaces to sort of get a sense of the highs and lows maybe they go through.
I think that that's such an insightful anecdote that you have provided, Che, because when we have our own classroom spaces, our own, you know, space that we go into every day, there's a certain amount of consistency. And when you become an instructional leader, you become a coach, you become a student success teacher, a centrally assigned teacher, you don't have the luxury of that consistency. Everything, every day is going to be different. And I know that you and I have had these conversations because you and I are in the same role now. We've had these conversations daily, you know, where I say, you know, I really don't know what to expect from today. I don't think it's going to be a great day because of X, Y, and Z that happened last time I was, you know, here. I feel a little bit nervous. And then, you know, the day goes by and then we reconnect to talk about, you know, how the day went. And it's like, it was completely different from what I thought it was going to be. There were, you know, this many successes, and that sort of predictability that we have when we're in our own classroom spaces, it's not there anymore. And so when we can rely on, you know, I know the students in my space, I more or less know what things are going to be happening, and so I can prepare and plan for that. There's a little bit of comfort in having your own classroom space, you know, not that it belongs to us, but you see the same people every day, you have the same students, you have the same expectations of what more or less is going to happen throughout the school. And that consistency gives us a little bit of comfort because we know what to expect. And so that's something that I have really learned is, one, don't take it personally when things don't go your way, because there are a lot of different factors that are playing into what that day will be like. And so I'm glad to hear that you've had that sort of realization that it's different, and you can't really influence the way that the day is going to go so much, or depend on that consistency to sort of know what your day is going to be like. I think that that's a pretty big revelation. And I think that you can really adjust how you approach the role based on just knowing that small fact. And so that's really helped me to not take the day so personally, and, you know, to sort of let go of a little bit of that control that you inherently have when it's your own classroom, your own space, the students that you see every single day. So that's my long-winded way of saying, don't worry about it. Don't worry, be happy.
Of course.
Yeah.
some good nuggets in there, Pav. You know, don't take it personally or don't get emotional. I still, I don't see a struggle with it, but, you know, struggle with it. Mm-hmm. if we've learned anything through sort of through all our social justice work, and not solely through social justice work, is the ability to honor emotion. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of rich to say, now, not that you use that word. You said, you didn't use the word emotion. You said responsibility. Or no, you didn't say responsibility. It wasn't my... Oh, you didn't say emotion. I made the connection to emotion. You just don't take it personally, you said. And then I sort of thought of emotion. I said, well, I want to honor the emotion. Now, I may not lash out with every emotion I have, but I don't want to just dismiss every emotion that comes with the job or anything per se. But I just start to drift a little bit into that space. It's like I understand what you're saying. There's so many other factors, and I think as human beings, we always simplify it, and we create probably erroneous steps or factors or levels of importance when there's so many things going on. You don't know what everyone's lived experiences or what they're going through on that daily basis to know what they're bringing to the table. So perhaps I have a negative interaction with a child. I know what you mean. Don't take it personally. It might not be what I've done or said, but that's where the student is at that moment. So you sort of, you take what they bring you. I remember actually an old principal said something to me that enlightened me years ago, that students bring the best they have every day.
Yeah.
And it may not be what we consider the best, whatever that might be, if you want to filter that through, but students are giving us our best, their best. And so how are we going to work with it? And you could put this into a sports analogy, but I won't. Well, I put it into a cooking analogy. Not
oh,
that I,
cooking.
Well, we're talking air fryers. Might as
not?
Well. You know, it's not every day do I have all the freshest ingredients in front of me and all the most expensive
That's right.
herbs. What can I whip up with 3 eggs and some old marble cheese that's got mold on it?
Oh, boy. You can cut that mold off in many cases and just still use the cheese.
But just fry it. Fry it. Air fry it. Cover it in eggs and fry it again. We'll try this after.
Okay.
During the break.
Sounds good.
We've been going a wild path. Let's get in. We should get into our anecdote.
Yeah.
But of course, we should talk about what we actually have coming up. And of course, by the time this episode is out, these events have already happened. So shame upon you for not registering when hearing about these in a few moments. Pav, let them know what we're up to, what we've been up to. It's sort of like a Back to the Future moment because we're recording this and we know we've got these events coming this week.
But
we're not releasing this episode until after those events have passed.
That's right. So it is going to be something that's in the past. Yes. Yeah, so we do have a couple of presentations, or we did have a couple of presentations.
It's eerie, eh?
It is. It's a little bit weird. So yes, we presented for Federation Day for ETT, Federation Elementary Teachers of Toronto, and as well as the ETFO, Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario, ICT conference. We talked about how to start a student-led podcast for both. And we hope that there were a lot of great moments.
It was a smashing success. Yes. You can tell by all the social media posts. We had a great time. And of course, Pat, if your school, if your board is interested in podcasting, like, we don't just fool around and talk about air fryers. We can bring some quality PD to your space when talking about student advocating, elevating student voice, and podcasting. So you can always reach out to us that way. How about a commercial, come back with an anecdote, and get into our episode?
I think that's a great idea.
Because we are once, twice, 119 times a podcaster. And you're listening to The Jay and Pav Show. And we are glad you are back. Let's get into the anecdote quickly, Pav.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can get into our conversation. I like our conversation today because it reminds me of sort of our first 20, 25 episodes where it wasn't so much research-based. It's just sort of about our observations, things we have done, and we were inspired to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
which is probably why we're recording now and not releasing it almost right away because we just released a wonderful episode.
That's right.
But with our new jobs comes a lot of professional development.
Yes.
And we are gifted development that not all teachers are gifted. And you and I have worked this out. Like, this is, how do you get rich, meaningful development to teachers? Because you can't rely on staff meetings and after school. So we sort of know our positionality that we're being gifted unbelievable amounts of professional mm-hmm. development. And then how can we find creative and innovative and inspiring ways to bring it into the spaces we're around? And so You know, there's many ways to document your learning, and we're always taking notes here or there, or chit-chatting with each other, or commenting with people beside you. And then there was a break, and you and I were going through our notebooks, and Shauna came over to us, you know, the illustrator of the picture book, The Magnificent Microphone. Mm-hmm. She's also in this crew of teachers. She said, "What are you guys, what are you writing down? You're taking notes, taking notes?" I said, No. I am now jotting down as many different podcast topics as I can based on the 45 minutes. And you and I were just flowing. Let's talk about this. Yeah. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. And the word that had come up is performative.
Yeah.
Performance. And you and I started to think about this a little bit, because I think I went on like a little mini chant. I said, the act of calling things out as performative is becoming nothing more than performative. Mm. It's a dance. And I don't know what I'm more angry at. Oh, that wasn't really angry. I'm just, you know, posturing. I'm getting almost more frustrated with people dedicating all their time to trying to announce things as performative, because I think it's now performative. Now I'm starting to think, is this just virtue signaling? And we were having this conversation.
Right.
And then I said, then we flipped it around. I was like, is there actually a place for the performative in how we build up doing the work? Because the work we know is important, and we all come at it from different lived experiences, and our role within that, although it's shared in many ways, but it's different in many ways as well. And so we started to think about how are we moving teachers to the work? And is performative part of that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather than necessarily, and this is sort of our conversation path, rather than scaring people off immediately by thinking if they do something that someone's going to, as fast as they can, scream as loud as they can that something's performative, and in fact alienating that teacher and almost assuring they're not going to do anything more.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should take on, if we think that we have this great insight to see everything as performative, perhaps we shouldn't invest our time in calling things out as performative, because now I want to know why am I doing it? Am I doing it to show to everyone that I can see something as performative, or am I doing it to actually try to help someone grow? And my observations is that most people, maybe myself included, or I guess I'll say myself, is that we get into this act of calling people out, and I think it becomes a little bit more of virtue signaling. I want everyone to know that I saw something as performative, but am I going to gift and give the necessary time and requirements and support that I am telling you, if I'm going to call you out or call you in or whatever you want to call it, is performative, you better be committed to more work than just that. That's not the work, in my opinion. Well, it's not the work to call someone out as performative. If you feel someone's doing something performative, which is hurtful, then you are committing yourself to support, mentoring, resources, checking in again, having conversation, bouncing ideas. But if you think your work is simply calling something that was performative, well, then for me, that's performative.
Wow. Yeah, Che. That's very powerful. And that, what a great way to start this conversation. This idea of the work being performative and how it deters people from starting doing the work, because there's this fear that it will just come across as being performative when they do it. It has me thinking about what makes work or anything performative, right? What makes it a performance? So we're doing it as a show. We're doing it to show off that we are doing something, when in fact it may not be something that is sincere or intentional or authentic to the community that we have in front of us. So we're showing off. We're doing something for others to see that we're doing it. So we might be doing this work for somebody else, right? Somebody else asked us to do it. So I'm thinking about maybe an administration saying, we've got a list of things that we have to do. I need to check off the things that we're doing, all of these things. So can we please do these things? Right. So that is something, when I think about performative, I think that's what it is. We're checking things off of a list. There's a certain expectations that are put out in front of us, and we need to comply, right? We need to comply with these expectations. And so that is something that makes it performative. Or even something like mimicry, right? The teacher next door is doing this thing. Maybe they are contributing to the assembly, and you think, well, I want to look just as good as that teacher. And maybe I'm going to mimic that teacher, and I'm going to do the same thing or something similar or something that gets me the same amount of attention. And I think that the point that we want to get to here is, yes, and you talked about so much about helping people grow and that virtue signaling of you know, constantly calling people out or in on the work that they are doing as being performative. But also, I think that what we have come to realize, and maybe in our own experience, our own lived experience, our own teaching experience, sometimes that performative action that we take with the work that we do in terms of social justice work can actually lead to our own growth or lead to the growth of the students that we have in front of us. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it may not be such a bad idea to engage in some performative work. Like, if there is some benefit from it, if maybe something sticks, you know, you see a positive outcome with the students that you are working with or with the teachers that you are working with, then was it really performative? Maybe the intention was performance, but the outcome may not be as such. And so is it still performative if there is a positive outcome?
That's a clever spin on that. I you caught me at embrace that perhaps these performative. Now I say performative in question marks, because what is performative? Who's stating something is performative? And I gotta sort of weave back on my own thoughts. Nothing we do is neutral. And so sometimes I think we get caught in, maybe it's not social justice work, any type of work. I think, it's adding on. Maybe it's not great work, but it's an add-on. It can only help. But that's not actually true. Some stuff can actually hurt. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So I think when we're diving into this idea of performative is something like the Pink Shirt Day. Yes. Maybe it's seen as performative, but you know, who's measuring that? Who's collecting data? And how many folks started sort of their anti-bullying crusades, their building up of real empathy, really taking further steps in the school? Did they start with the more nuanced, entrenched steps, or did they maybe they start with the pink shirt, and it opened their eyes? We always talk about these co-learning, that as teachers, we're learning in the spaces together as well. Well, part of this performance is also us diving into new content area. I bring a lot of this stuff back to classroom teaching. And what are good practices in teaching? Well, good practices in teaching are scaffolding and modeling and having access points and a variety of access points. And building some flow and building capacity. And one could probably argue that in teaching, as we build capacities, it's about all those great components of teaching. And so when I think of what is considered performative gesturing, performative gestures of, I gave the Pink Shirt Day as one in particular, that if, are we sticking around to watch to see if the act really was performance, which was your Annette, or are we monitoring to see if this leads to folks further embracing the content and taking the ownership to do a little bit more, to learn a little bit more, that all of a sudden if they go into their math space, all of a sudden they're a little bit more aware of how a student may be bullied in a math space where maybe they weren't as aware before, and the pink shirt became an access point. And so this concept, this conversation we have is like, is there a place to embrace performative, I put in quotation marks, performative work, because it provides the scaffolding that some folks are going to need to get into this space and to start doing the work. I think of, I remove again the social justice component, I talk about poetry.
Yeah.
And I think of the very superficial performative poetry I would have done in my class in year 5,
yeah,
year 6, year 7. But those pieces, as I got a little bit more, as I saw student success with them,
yes,
I said, oh, I could try this next. I could do this next. And collectively, maybe not each, maybe the class I had in year 7, we didn't grow. We grew. But in regards to poetry, I got an idea by how they engaged in that poetry for how I would set it up in grade 8, how I'd set up in grade 9. And I know in like year 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 in my class that poetry became foundational, woven through everything, but it wasn't beforehand. Yeah. But my poetry that I would have started with would have been, I would have deemed, performative poetry, performance, one-offs, simplistic, no depth of understanding. Yet it was those first steps for me as a teacher in seeing those student successes, the cross interaction between us, the collective growth, that all of a sudden my poetry, I would never say I'm a great poetry teacher or have a great poetry program, but I know poetry is woven throughout almost everything I do.
So here's why I think that that worked. You as a teacher looked at the data, right? You looked at your data. You looked at the student success. You looked at the stories. You saw how students were responsive to the poetry, that performative, you called it, I'm putting it in quotation marks, you called it performative poetry that you were doing in your spaces. You looked at that data that was impacting the students with that poetry. And in your, you've said this in the early episodes that we talked about, you know, there were some areas of the curriculum that you didn't feel as strong. So you were much more intentional about making those areas of your teaching stronger. You were intent on improving those areas. So you saw where maybe there were some holes in your pedagogy, and you were able to fill those holes with your own personal growth. Now, I would hope that most teachers that are, you know, teaching in the practice of teaching are taking a look at their data year after year. And, you know, student stories, the successes that we see, our own pedagogical documentation is data, right? We're looking at that year after year or even throughout the year to see what is working and what is not working and where students are responding. And we're building upon that. And so we looked at that data. You looked at that data and you improved your poetry to so much so that it is now woven into, as you say, every part of the curriculum because it was impactful. It was important. It was important to you. It was important to the students. And so you can't really say at that point that any of it was performative, right? Because even that initial poetry that you thought was being done as an add-on, you were using it intentionally. So was it really performative? Now, you touched on something earlier on to say that, you know, nothing we do as teachers is neutral, that it can be harmful. There is potential for harmful. So what I'm thinking about is, when does it become harmful? Because at some point, that performative thing, the reason that it's always being called out or that many people do call out some things as being performative is because it is harmful. So at what point does the performance, whether it's in the curriculum or whether it's the social justice work that we are doing in our classroom spaces, when does it become harmful and how do we prevent that? I'm throwing that out there as, you know, you don't have to answer this. Maybe this is something that we can talk about. But if you've got an answer, I want to hear it.
Oh, you want to know what I've done?
Yes.
As you were talking about that, I started to think about some of the Indigenous art assignments I had used in my class as I started to become more aware of how the Indigenous story was erased from every component of my classroom. Willfully, unwillfully, I probably couldn't even articulate it, but I could disrupt and go through the data of my teachings to say I didn't have any. And so as I maybe rushed too fast to embed, I would do art activities like dream catchers that are purely performative, and then I look and I cringe that I did
You've
them.
Said
but
this
that was
in
my
the
first
early
step.
Episodes
and
that
so
we talked
talk
about,
about,
you know, there were some areas of the curriculum
with our conversation
that you didn't
with
feel as strong. So you were much more intentional about
I don't even know if she used that explicit word, but that's just
stronger.
How I felt when she
you
spoke. Is
were
that this is
intent on improving those areas.
This is hurtful.
So you saw where maybe
like
you
or
there were some holes in your
the root of all
your
Indigenous work,
and you were able to fill those holes with
So what did you do with that?
Now, I would
so
hope
I don't do that.
I would hope that most teachers
anymore.
That are you know teaching in the practice
more
of teaching
nuanced,
are taking
detail,
a look at their
more,
data year after year, and you know student stories,
authentic voices,
the successes that we see, our own pedagogical
hearing,
documentation,
Indigenous authors,
is data, right? We're looking
you know,
at that year after year, or even throughout the year, to see what is working and what is not working, and where students are responding, and we're building upon that. And so we looked at that data. You looked at that data, and you.
This is where
your
it does
poetry to
because,
so much
you know,
so that it, it is now woven
and,
into, as you say,
people say you got
to
do the work
because
you won't get it perfect. So
because it was impactful. It was important
to build up a certain
it was important
level
to you,
of
it was important to the
before
students.
You start.
And so you can't
you
really
an
say
an
at
expert.
That point that any of it was
sort of something I'm grappling with.
Right, because even that initial poetry that you thought was
being
done as an add-on,
you
were using it intentionally. So was it really performative?
I've learned a lot.
you touched on something earlier on to say that, you know, nothing that we do as teachers is neutral.
Even asserting that I'm a social justice
warrior.
That it can
be harmful. There is potential for
harmful. Not because I'm not committed
to
the work.
So what I'm thinking about is, when does it become harmful?
I think my classroom is a really good mentor text.
And that performative thing, the reason that it's always being called out, or that many people do call out some things as being performative, is because it is harmful. So at what point does the performance, whether it's in the curriculum or whether it's due to whether it's the social justice work that we are doing in our classroom spaces,
but at least in the spaces I'm aware of how I can be hurtful with the words I use, the examples
I'm throwing that out there as, you know, you don't have to answer this. Maybe
but I think this also comes down to class culture.
Talk about. But if you've got an answer, I want to hear it.
Oh, if you speak,
you want to know what I've done?
Social justice. Yes. Throughout all content, all the time, not just as a Thursday
morning.
As you were
talking about that, I started to think about some of
conversation
the
activity
indigenous
that sort of seems
art
silo.
Assignments.
Mm. I had
students become
used
more
in my
open
class
to the idea that
you're learning
too,
but they know that you're committed to it.
Of how
and so there
the
becomes
indigenous
a grace
was erased
in the space.
From every
so
component
think,
of my classroom.
I think what I saw the most, again,
willfully,
this
unwillfully,
is data. This
I
is
probably
not,
couldn't
just,
even
just
articulate
it,
but I could
doesn't mean it's
disrupt
not data.
And
what I saw
go through
in
the data
that
of my teachings is that
they
I didn't
saw
have
in me a
and
commitment
so
to social
maybe
justice.
Rush too fast to
variety,
embed,
whether it be indigenous issues,
I would do
issues, LGBTQ
art activities
that they saw.
Dreamcatchers.
I would be an advocate,
that are purely
I was doing my best. I was putting it out there in public. I was sharing the learning.
That
was
my first
books
step.
I was
and
reading,
so when you talk about
it, didn't make
how
me
am I
perfect,
hurting,
but I think it opened
a conversation
to
Kalinda Klein.
My teacher's committed.
I don't
so
even know if she
the
used
trauma
that explicit
I could
word,
but
induced,
that's just how I felt.
Or was potentially inducing
when she
to
spoke,
the task.
Is that this has become maybe less so. I don't definitively know. Because students
know,
knew
like
what
this,
my
or to make this
again intent
the
isn't
root of
isn't
all your
indigenous
issues,
right?
But I
again,
think
so
in
it could
a classroom,
be performative.
Do,
so what did you do with that?
It is important to them to know what
so
your intent
I don't do that
is.
Activity anymore.
Although I've had a great 21 years
to go a little bit more,
been really open with people that I get away with my mistakes.
And I get away with my mistakes, maybe because
voices.
I'm white, maybe because I'm male, maybe because I'm privileged, but it's also because
I'm
really
into
competent.
Workshops, hearing,
it's also because I really care about my job. And it's also because
you know,
I commit tons and tons
of
hours and extracurricular hours
in
and so
studies.
You,
and
so
you've earned
I know
I've
become
much
more
purposeful.
So
was it hurtful?
On my
it
journey
of
hurtful.
Of,
and so you ask
work,
a great question. Like my students have gifted me.
And this is where space to get better.
Because
when
maybe they could have burned me down.
For
saying something inappropriate,
and
not that I was trying
think,
to say something
you've got
to
do the work,
because
you won't get it perfect. So you've got to do the work,
but do you
they
have to build
that
up
I was on
a
journey
and
on
a
journey
for the right reasons?
Start.
And
we sort of
not
all
that
collectively
an
knew
expert
that the classroom was better
and so
for
that,
it.
That's sort of something I'm
and
so
grappling
it comes back
with.
Down to those roots of class culture. So that's really long.
This is why in the
question.
Social justice movement,
no,
and
I
think
you know our studies
have
to my long-winded question.
I'll speak for me. I know I've learned a lot from
you.
I've learned
a lot
from
really great things.
But
I took
me,
a bunch
I'm not
of notes. I circled
even
a bunch of things. I highlighted a bunch
warrior.
Of things. I
think
the most
I'm not committed
important
to the work and wanting to learn
thing
and
that
wanting
you
to
said
grow
is
and
that
and
you want to approach
I think my classroom is
a
really good mentor
a level of
for what a white male can do
honesty and transparency
in a racialized community. Not
because
it's
because
perfect,
ultimately it boils
because it's sort
down
of imperfect, but it's committed to the
with
task.
Your students through the content that you are teaching,
and so
if students can see that you are being introspective,
so I try to. You,
that you
common
are
sense.
Constantly
now, that's tough
disrupting
to gauge,
and
that's
and
tough to monitor.
Interrogating.
But at least in the spaces, I'm aware of how I can be hurtful with the words I use, the examples I choose, the
in
trivial
that classroom
tasks.
Space.
But
as,
I think this also
you know,
comes
someone
down to
who
class
is
culture.
Not. The
class
be
culture,
all and the end all
if you
of the
speak
space,
openly
not
on
the,
social
you know,
justice
the higher power,
all content
the voice
all the time
the
not just as
that
a Thursday morning
has equal voice in that learning space,
conversation activity
and
that sort of seems in a silo
facilitate
students
whatever
become
learning
more
is happening
open
day,
to the idea that you're learning too
you are,
but they know that you're
your
committed to it
is going to
and
be
so
great
there
regardless
a
of
grace
the intent,
in the space.
Right? Like that your intent,
so
of course,
think,
intent matters.
I think
and
what I saw
I
the most,
that, that,
again,
that is an
this is data. This
that
is not,
making
not
that impact
just because it's
versus
not EQAO
intent,
doesn't mean
right?
it's
so
not
your,
data.
Your intentions.
What I saw in students is that they saw in
regardless
me
of performative or not performative, as a teacher, I hope that
on
your intentions
a variety
are good.
Of whether it be indigenous issues,
but the impact of your intentions
that they saw
is
I would be an advocate, an ally.
Is going to differ.
I was doing my best. I was putting it out there in public. I was sharing the learning.
Whether or not you
I
are
reading,
self-interrogating
and, it didn't
and
make
disrupting
me perfect,
yourself
but I think it opened up the space to
thinking about
my
the work
teachers
that
committed
doing in your space.
And so
you
the trauma I could have induced
bank finances
or was potentially
yes,
using
my money's
tasks,
growing,
but I think
it
becomes
grows
maybe
less
week,
so.
I don't
but not every day does it
know.
Grow
because students
right.
know. And
knew
so
what
my,
do we dis-
derail our growth when we have individual moments that don't go well.
In a classroom, we zoom in so close on them.
It is important to them to know what your intent
is. And so this becomes sort of...
Although I've had a great 21 years of teaching, I've also been really open with people
that I get away with my mistakes. It doesn't matter. It's about impact.
And I get away with my mistakes. Maybe because I'm
open with what we're intending to do.
But it's also because of the culture. Then all of a sudden, it's also because I really care about my job.
That's right.
And it's also because I commit tons and tons of hours and extracurricular hours.
It's most harmful when there is no quest for more knowledge. And when there is no quest for more growth,
on my journey of
that's when it's harmful.
Can I come to you on this
work? Because I've got a couple of notes here.
Gifted me
because we've been
the space to get better. Because
it's commitment
when maybe
they could have burned me down.
When teachers are committed
to something inappropriate,
so
how did I was trying to say something inappropriate,
inspire
something hurtful.
People to be committed to
that
their
I was on a journey,
and this comes
on a journey for the right reasons, and they
know something
sort of
else. I find very performative
that the classroom was better
and
for it.
Maybe what we're finding in this conversation is that what is performative is individualized.
That's a really long-winded question.
That what is performative to you is not
an
long-winded
answer.
And so when we throw around
to my long-winded question, yes,
performative has become almost like one of those words.
You said a lot of really
holds different meaning for everyone, and almost has no
value
now for anybody as
a collective. A bunch of things
to have a shared
understanding.
I think this word get uncomfortable.
Thing that you said is that you want to
approach. I actually don't believe that
anything that you do as a teacher with a level of authenticity, honesty,
and it doesn't mean
transparency.
I hope I'm not trying to
because ultimately it boils down to the relationships that you create with your students through the content
that
you are teaching. And so,
if
students can see that you are being introspective, that you are constantly disrupting and self-interrogating,
they're creating great,
and you are
making
a conscious effort to decenter yourself.
And I don't believe that.
In that classroom space, as you know, someone who is not
making someone uncomfortable is one thing.
The be-all
and
end-all of the space, not the higher power, the voice of the classroom, that everybody has equal voice in that learning space, and you were simply there to facilitate whatever learning is happening that day.
Well,
then your impact is going to be great regardless
of the
intent.
One of the great PD sessions we had,
right?
Was
like that your intent,
trauma,
of course, intent matters. And
yes,
I think that is an important point that we are making, that
gets
impact
in a space
versus
it doesn't
intent,
feel comfortable
right? So your intentions,
by, feels traumatized by, it goes into survival mode.
Regardless of performative
so
or not performative, as a teacher,
approach.
I hope that your intentions are good.
You're not growing in that space.
But the impact of your intentions
survival mode. So how come
is
we
going
chase
to differ
getting uncomfortable
on the work
as a
that
means
you're doing
to learning when,
and whether or not
we think
you
this
are
through,
self-interrogating
we know you don't
and disrupting
learn in that
yourself
space.
And constantly
right. Again,
thinking
it goes back
about
to
the work
calling
that you
in,
were
calling
doing
out.
In your space.
If you want to force people
to
get uncomfortable, it comes with the commitment that you're
so
going
to
offer all
yes,
the scaffolding. And then this comes back to me again.
It
always comes back to great
teaching pedagogies.
Right.
As a teacher,
and so
I never strive to make my students uncomfortable.
Our growth,
and if they're uncomfortable,
we're
not leaving them on their own to figure
out.
Well,
that's right.
And I'm certainly don't think,
so
we talk about math,
them,
we think
we
make students uncomfortable with math, they're going to become
package. And so this becomes
we're
going
to build their math capacity. In fact, I think we already know this to be not the truth.
Intent matters, but also intent doesn't matter.
This is the piece when it comes to math.
We
want the struggle. We want the struggle to be productive.
And we built that culture. Then all of a sudden,
it
is important.
It is
important.
All of the work that we are doing in our spaces. So when is it most harmful? It's most harmful when there is no quest
when
for more
no
knowledge
involved,
and when there is
how
no
do we
quest
push
for more
to
growth,
grow
if
can
that's
I don't
when
want
it's harmful
to grow,
we have to
one?
Help
because I've
them.
Got a couple of notes yes here.
Sure and when you get them uncomfortable when somebody is uncomfortable
it's commitment to improvement
you guide them
yes
through that
exactly.
Work. You support them you provide
so
them with the care you provide them with the care that is necessary for that growth
to be committed to their improvement.
If I think about my own children,
you know,
right, my own
else
child is you know, upset about something,
and maybe,
is
maybe
having
what
a very,
we're finding in this
is
conversation
not in
is
a,
that what is performative
is not in a learning brain mode,
that
is in
what
a survival brain mode.
Is not performative
mode.
To me.
I have
and
to,
so when
it
we
is
throw
my
around terms like good,
person who
performative has become almost like
child,
one of those words. It holds different meanings for everyone and almost has no value now for anybody as a collective to have a shared understanding. I think of this word of get uncomfortable.
How often is that
done when people are professing?
You
got
to get uncomfortable. Mm-hmm.
And
or
I don't believe
have they
right.
convinced themselves that I've done the teaching because I made you uncomfortable,
and
which is why I use the expression,
I hope I'm not trying to project
this.
On people.
There's
but
a
but
rush to make everyone uncomfortable
I find
because they feel that's the magic formula to
because
learning,
come
but it's
back
not.
To this, right.
It is a potential opportunity to learn, but it requires a lot of work. And so if you want to chase to make people
uncomfortable,
it comes with the moral and ethical responsibility that you're committed to their growth
and people
beyond just that moment. Because if that's the moment you're patting yourself on the shoulder for the work,
people feel
uncomfortable.
Then for me, that's...
And I don't believe
that's
that.
That's not it.
No,
I actually believe that making you... And Pat, right. You've talked about
you,
this.
You
making someone uncomfortable does one thing.
It makes them uncomfortable. So that mm-hmm. you and can appear to be the most knowledgeable.
I don't think there's a lot of data to suggest that when most people get uncomfortable, they get better.
To then...
Right. If there's not a whole bunch of other pieces
that
go with it, all
you've
done is make someone...
Because, well, did you leave them away?
Because you and want the teacher to grow, right?
You've done
you,
some
you don't
work
just want to look like a,
one of the great.
You don't want to look like you don't want to be the person
trauma
in the group of 30
trauma informed
that
teaching.
The,
yes,
sorry, and it was about rewind. The science of the brain.
And in that
brain
situation,
in
you just wanted to look like the person that was calling someone out with 30 around, but you weren't committed to the work that goes with it.
That's right.
And so the literature
makes someone uncomfortable.
This is about you're not learning in that space. You're not growing
work. So it comes back to my
you're in original
survival mode.
Is making
so
people
how
uncomfortable
we chase
the best way to make teachers
getting uncomfortable
grow?
As a means to learning
actually,
when inherently if we think this through we actually know you
storms.
Don't learn in that space
it's about
right.
inspiring
again
about
it comes back
to
calling
to
in
PD.
Calling out if you want to force people
my
to get uncomfortable it comes
again,
with the commitment that you're going to offer all the scaffolding and then this comes back to me again because only comes back to great teaching pedagogy
but
as a teacher,
it wasn't
I
a level of
uncomfortableness
that put me in this space.
And if they're uncomfortable, I'm not leaving them on their own
it
to
was
figure
inspiration.
It out.
That's right.
And I certainly don't think, we talk about math, we think we wait for students uncomfortable with math, they're going to become these
people,
like we're going to build their math capacity.
In
fact, I think we already know this to be not the truth.
But this is the piece. This is the piece. When it comes to math, we want the struggle. We want the struggle to be productive.
For us.
So
to do it ourselves.
When it
so
comes to all of the work that we are doing in our spaces, you know, when does it become performative? When there's no growth involved? But how do we push someone to grow?
Because I
if they don't want
really
to grow, we
to
have
say,
to help them do it.
Let's yes. try to make someone
and when you get them uncomfortable,
the
when somebody is uncomfortable,
it, one or two people
you guide them through that work. You support them. You provide them with the care. You provide them with
the
care that is necessary for that growth. Because if I think about
my
own children.
Two or three
right my own child is you know upset about something is having a very is not
I,
in a
I find the
is not in a learning brain
the,
mode
the
is in a survival
run.
Brain mode
and it doesn't,
I
it
have
chase
to
single.
It is my
I
responsibility
my
as the person
sports
who
metaphor.
Is responsible
I want
for
to
this
get
child
single. Not one guy to hit a grand
to
slam
to get them into a zone where they can go back into learning mode so I have to provide
the
care and the support for my child to
turn it into an air fryer analogy which you just said
we're almost ready for
I think we are. I think we might be. I think we need a moment.
Or
just
have they convinced
right.
themselves that I've done the teaching because I made you uncomfortable, which is why I use the expression.
It's been a good conversation.
Yeah,
unscripted.
There's a rush to make everyone
just,
uncomfortable
just,
because they
like
feel that's the magic
episode.
Formula
yes.
to
we
learning, but it's not.
Time preparing.
Right.
It's not that I said we didn't prepare.
Don't be that
that's
the only
right.
nugget you take in this episode. They don't prepare. They don't prepare. I call them.
To make people uncomfortable, it comes with the moral and ethical responsibility that you're committed to their growth beyond just that moment. Because if that's the moment you're patting yourself on the shoulder for the work, then for me that's
not it.
No, that's
that's performance. Right. You found the perfect opportunity
Hello,
to
world.
Call somebody out
Ryan
so that
Astral
you can appear to be
Breaker
the most knowledgeable
EDU, and you are listening
in a particular
to the
space.
Action.
But what work did you do to then you know, to help that person that you have just called out grow?
Because,
or did you leave it at that?
Because you want
and
the teacher to grow, right?
You, by
you don't just
ninja.
Want to look like
air fryer.
You don't want to look like
the
you
best
don't
way
be
to make
person.
Cheesecake
in the group of 30.
What teacher doesn't like cheesecake?
In that situation, you just wanted to look like the person who was calling someone else
for
30 around.
This
episode
is also brought to you by Champ
Path. With it.
Soon to be the sponsors of the slow pitch team.
Uncomfortable. This is uncomfortable. It comes with
and also,
work, so it comes back to my original statement.
The authors
is,
of The Magnificent
is
Microphone.
Is people uncomfortable the best way to make
podcast
teachers grow?
Presenters? And, of course,
is,
if you really want to get nitty-gritty, go to champhav.com.
Inspiring.
Subscribe.
It's about giving teachers
and
access to PD.
That's almost said weekly newsletter, Pav. That'd be a lot of pressure, eh?
Again,
our monthly newsletter, the Champ Pav writes and put together, which I really just mean Pav writes and puts together because she's brilliant in those spaces. And I'm like,
it wasn't a level of uncomfortableness that put me in
this space. But I really enjoy that space. And we would really enjoy
it was inspiration.
Because if Twitter
were
to
implode tomorrow, it was about people like use an example like Kalinda Klein coming in and just sharing her passion, sharing her lived experience, and you just felt that you had to do more. You were inspired to do more and being gifted the time. Now, we know a lot of that learning for us. We had to do it ourselves. So what is our system doing?
And you're listening to Champ Pav Show.
Makes them morally and ethically driven to better their practice Because I think it's really simple to say, let's get uncomfortable. Good. Let's try to make someone uncomfortable.
Lies. I never made
because
one.
Then in the one or two people that will do it, one or two people will self-profess this was the difference. But the majority have not.
I just fed you.
And so this reminds me to some of the things
all
I did
you had to do was take it. All you had to do was say, yes, I know. And everyone would have
outlier performances that made my teaching look good and forget the masses.
In the air fryer.
And I think I find the uncomfy pieces, the home run.
And authentic.
And it doesn't change the single. I want everyone in my lineup. Chain. Sports metaphor. I want everyone in my lineup to get single. Not one guy to hit a grand slam.
I said you made a great cheesecake.
I want everyone to be able
That's
to
what
hit.
I said.
I have to cheesecake the in the fridge, but I bought it from the store. I'm trying to turn it That's into an air fryer analogy.
Dude,
which
this
you
episode's
just
over.
Said.
We're almost
because
ready
we're recording live.
I think we are.
Table.
I think we might be.
That's
I think right. we need a moment to just process
so, hey, first two people,
then,
you're in.
Possibly
and there's cheesecake for you.
Swag bag after this.
Because it's a good conversation.
This is a great episode.
Just, totally,
at least
yeah.
I think.
It'll be like our
by the majority.
Episode.
I have to get some more data
we'll
on that.
As much time preparing.
Because for
not
one,
that I said we
roots,
didn't prepare.
Don't just, be that the only nugget you take from this episode.
They don't prepare. They don't prepare. I called them.
This is the 50 minutes of our episode.
I've enjoyed this
probably
conversation,
only 30 minutes because the first 17 minutes is banter. But we're not cutting.
Let's take a break and then we'll come back.
We'll be right back.
But where does it lead us? With no definitive answers.
Ryan Aspinall.
Some thoughts.
Codebreaker EDU.
Some ideas. Spaces for other folks to join in and share. What are their experiences? Like, I gotta be. I'll refresh my positionality.
Or do you want to take
21 years, white, male, teaching in a racialized community.
Oh, yeah. You ready?
Moving on to a teaching, central teaching job has put me
and
in a
this
bunch
episode
of different
is brought to you by
a bunch
Ninja
of other
Air Fryers.
Yes. I don't necessarily
the best
know
way
what's
to make
right.
cheesecake.
My experiences are based on
what
my
teacher
experiences.
Doesn't
right?
like cheesecake.
As much as I speak loudly.
I've never made a cheesecake.
Not to project on you. But maybe it opens up the room
after this episode
for dialogue.
This episode is also brought to you by Chan Pass.
Yeah, and I think that that's the most
soon to be the sponsors of the slow
here,
pitch team.
Because Chan and I, you know, although we come at this with very,
also,
very different lived experiences, different
the authors of
different
the
lives,
podcast
we didn't
presenters,
come to any sort of
and
answer
of course,
here. And
if
I would,
really
I would,
get
I'm actually very curious to
go
know
to
what people think about this.
Subscribe
and how you feel about
and
it.
Get
you
our,
know,
that's how I said weekly newsletter, Pav. That'd be a lot of pressure, eh? Our monthly newsletter, the Chan Pav write and put together. Which I really just mean Pav writes and puts together because she's brilliant in those spaces. And I'm like, oh, newsletter.
There's
but I think you'd really enjoy that space, and we would really enjoy.
And I used to think this
way because
of
Twitter. Were to implode
that it's a very
tomorrow.
Individualized experience. So I can say that I myself became motivated because of the podcast
we'll be right back
or
with this right back.
Because of being gifted particular professional developments, and it moved me. And as an individual, I made the decision to gain some more insight, to gain more knowledge.
And you're
to
listening to
my practice.
The Chan Pav Show.
But how are we doing that as a community? How are we encouraging our peers, our colleagues, to also encounter or engage in some growth? Or is it even our place to do that? You know, how do we do this work collectively without it becoming performative? And so that is a question that I continue to grapple with.
And you're listening to
and I didn't give it a
Chan Pav Show.
I used to think of it as this is my journey. This is the work that I am doing.
So,
I am a better
so
teacher
good.
Because of the work
it's,
that I
it's
did
lies.
To improve
I never made
myself.
One.
I don't know how to make a cheesecake.
But
now,
in
where
air fryer?
Is my responsibility?
This reminds me of the book
to
Rebound.
Make
I'm
this
read
part
I just
of
fed
community
you perfect
work,
lie.
Or collaborative
all you had to do
work.
Was take it. All you had to do was say
do
yes.
I
know.
That responsibility?
And everyone
and
would have
gave
believed
me that responsibility.
That we could make
did
cheesecake
I give myself that responsibility,
in
or
the
is
air
that
fryer,
something that I just have to grow into?
Past
I chose to be honest,
journey and authentic.
Doing this
and
work.
Transparent
and so
with
that,
my
that's
audience
that I continue to grapple with and I don't know if there's an answer to
say?
That I don't know if somebody can give
I
me
I said
some
you made a great
insight.
Cheesecake
give me something
that's
to
what
read.
I said
give me something to listen to
I have
to
cheesecake in the fridge but I bought it from the store
like,
I know
that's dessert
like I'm going in the right direction
dude this episode's
this.
Over because we're recording
a lot of great things
kitchen table
and what
that's
resonated
right.
with
two empty chairs so hey first two people you're in
you've got to take care of yourself first you got to know
only two slices
this has been a great episode
we know we can't ever really know ourselves but before we
by the majority I have to get some more data on that
maybe before we
because for one reminds me of our roots
community
it's just it was we had one little blurb in our notebook. What is performance? And this is the 50 minutes of our episode.
Bit,
mm-hmm. Probably only 30 minutes.
I think we're trying
to
position
minutes,
that
you know, banter,
perhaps
but we're not
performative is a space
but where does it
where
leave us
we
with
as
no
individuals
definitive answers?
Start
yeah.
some thoughts.
And so our growth comes
some
from
ideas,
a little taste
spaces
of knowledge,
for other folks
taste
to join
success.
In and share.
And so
yeah.
what are their
bring
experiences?
Perhaps
I get a performative gestures into
my
positionality. 21 years. it white becomes an access teaching point, in a racialized a window community to wanting to do a little bit more.
Teaching, central and teaching jobs, put you me in the a bunch students of different collectively spaces, growing with a bunch of other together. Different teachers.
And so
I don't necessarily know performance, what's right.
Which I think what we've based done in this episode has really opened up what the working as I speak definition loudly, of performance is,
because I think it's going to be different for everyone.
But maybe it opens up the room for dialogue.
Our performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that that's the most important part here is because Che and I, although we come at this with very, very different lived experiences, different lives, we didn't come to any sort of answer here. And I'm actually very curious. Maybe the orange shirt is the starting point they need. And how you feel about it, because I'm thinking about the individual versus the community when we're doing this work in our classrooms when it comes to social justice work or even just improving our pedagogy in the classroom.
Spur on the community to do more.
There's this real...
So then it becomes...
And I used to think this way as well.
Calling out people as performative becomes performative.
That it's a very individualized experience. I can say that I myself became motivated because of the podcast.
To inspire for more action.
Because of being gifted particular professional developments. And it moved me. And as an individual,
I made the decision to
gain some more insight, to gain more knowledge, to improve my practice.
Uncomfortable, as I said.
But
earlier,
how are we doing that as a community?
Is not the first
how
thing
are we
to chase
encouraging
for
our peers, our
and
colleagues?
And we know it's part of that growth, not for everyone.
Encounter or engage in some growth, or is it even our place to do that?
Commitment to those that are making those uncomfortable.
How do we do this work collectively without
you convinced yourself that it's uncomfortable?
And so that is a question that I continue to grapple with.
And you talked about that brilliantly.
I didn't give it a lot of
thought.
I used to think of it as this is my journey.
Find yourself, build yourself,
this is
grow
the work
yourself.
That I am doing. I am a better teacher because of the work that I did to improve
myself. That level of responsibility. Now, how can
I impact my
responsibility? Whether it's the community you're teaching in, whether it's the learning network
or collaborative.
I love that you brought that back to that.
Do I have that responsibility? And who gave me that responsibility? Did I give myself that responsibility? Or is that something that I just have to grow into as part of the journey into doing this work? And so that's something that I continue to grapple with. And I don't know if there's an answer to that. I don't know if somebody can give me some more insights, give me something to read, give me something to listen to make me feel.
And then are we growing at all?
Like,
and so it's something to be
like, I'm going in the right direction.
Everything
with
is complex.
Pav, you said a lot of great things.
This is what we're trying to
and
get
what
to.
Pav, why with a me, couple of comments, and we'll wrap
firstly
this up with
was
this
the idea.
Not that I have anything.
You've
got
to take care of yourself
I don't
first.
Have,
you know yourself.
I don't have anything further
and we know
to
we can't
add,
ever really know
except
ourselves.
For
but
one
before
thing,
we can start
I think that I will
the
add this one
or maybe before we should even try to start impacting the community. We need to have impacted
have to consider
ourselves.
Rest.
And this goes back to actually sort of the theme of this episode that maybe has been lost a little bit. Is that
a lot of people are doing
this
work.
I think we're trying
a lot
to position that perhaps performative
this work and have
is a space where we as individuals
and are
start.
Exhausted from this
and so
work.
Our growth comes from a little
to
taste of knowledge, a little taste of success.
To rest ourselves.
And so when we bring perhaps these performative gestures into our room, like
an opportunity
the pink shirt
to
day or the orange shirt
because
day,
in that
it
rest
becomes an access
reflection.
Point.
It comes
a window
further growth.
To wanting to do a little
it
bit more.
Comes the,
and
the
and maybe it's you and the students collectively growing together.
And so I think
and
that
so this
you know,
act of performance, which I think what we've done in this episode is
very,
really
very
opened up what the
in,
working
in
definition of performance
there
is, because I think it's going to be different for everyone.
People put on
is that perhaps
when they are doing
performance,
this work. And it's not
being
easy
aware of trauma that it can induce and not to just say go for it anyways, like recklessly.
For that person to grow.
But also
because
being
there are
aware
a lot of emotions
that,
that are tied
acts,
into that
experience.
And
even for our students, it may be
and so,
first
I just want to leave that, I, because
right.
I don't want to leave
maybe the
that
orange
piece
shirt
unsaid.
Is the starting
I think it's
point
also very important.
And so rather
and
than
we may not go into it
turning
as much
it into
today
a moment
so
where you can call everyone else
research,
out for their performative
so
actions on wearing an orange shirt,
surrounding the importance
you can take that moment to maybe help bridge or
when it comes
spur
to
on the community
that
to do more.
That's something
that's
that we can explore
like,
at a different
so then it
time,
becomes,
but I also
so
want
then
to
the
put
folks,
out there in
this
episode,
is where calling out
is
people as performative becomes performative because are you really doing the work? When ultimately we can maybe say, this
be,
is the gifted opportunity to inspire
no, Pav,
for more action.
So well said,
I
don't think
we've
really addressed that at all.
And who are we putting the emotional burden
in a
on
place that maybe they're all, afraid to inspire us now because and they're afraid to be called out because someone's
and who are the same folks
and uncomfortable
then
to learn.
It does become a
perhaps
nuanced conversation because
uncomfortable.
You have to find
said,
sort of that sweet bliss because at some point in my journey I don't know enough and I can't find the resource. I can't look up. I haven't found the story. I haven't found the clip.
We know it's
component.
We know it's differentiated.
Try to, but at some point I do commitment to those that are making those
uncomfortable experience.
But I think that's the moral responsibility
to that voice
when you haven't put in the work yourself.
That it's uncomfortable.
But how do we demonstrate that we've done that
factor?
Work?
But you know,
because it's
you
tough.
And
no
always
one
fixated on, and
you no
talk with
has almost any idea
that you put it nice and linear.
Not that everything
and
has
so
to be
it
linear.
Becomes difficult to negotiate.
Find yourself,
so
build yourself.
I'm glad
grow
you
yourself.
And once you
have
on,
take on that
completely
responsible,
couple that with the rest that.
There are
level responsibilities
that are
now how can
asked
I
all the time in community.
They feel they just
hallway,
need to make people uncomfortable
whether
because
the community
that's where
teaching,
they're at
whether
in their
the,
journey
right.
because
learning
they've gone through so many things where they haven't seen the outcomes they want to see.
Back to
exactly.
That.
And
exactly.
I just wanted to
and
sort
I think
of remind
this comes back
folks
to something
I
you talked
think
about.
We're
this
to
is really a very personal journey. We can't know what
into
everyone
growth.
Is going through. And
because
I think
it's really
performance. That's what we're getting to. Is it
hurts?
And performative I'm not saying
it doesn't. I'm not
performance
just trying to extract a little bit more from this. Because we turn things, everything into
simplified
explanations
and
that performative
and
is
it becomes
solely
complex
traumatizing.
How
then we're not engaging
performative action.
Perceive performative things. And then are we growing at all?
Or help?
And so it's something to be.
And I guess for each individual,
is complex,
it can do
one
nuance,
or the other.
And I think
yeah,
that this
right.
is what
not
we're trying to get to.
Pav,
why don't you, a couple of comments, and we'll wrap this up with a swag bag. Not that I have anything yet.
I don't have anything
yeah,
further to add,
minutes.
Except for one
fast.
Thing. I
you
think that
what?
I will add this
I,
one
I
thing
really,
that we
really
have to also consider.
Because I think these are things that have been brewing in us for
some
time
now.
Rest.
And I
think
we have to consider
hour
because a lot of people are doing this work. A lot of people
things
are out there doing
that we've had on
have been doing this
with this
work
sort of
and
intent and purpose
and are
and
exhausted
so,
from this work
no answers
and I think
per
that
se.
We have
no,
to take time
no,
we've ascended to no
to
mountaintop
rest ourselves
but I think that what we did was articulate things
and
that
also
were on our
allow
mind,
people an
after
opportunity
we had
to rest because in
further,
that rest
and I think
comes
that the conversation was really beneficial
comes,
I think we went
growth.
Beyond
it
the simplistic
the,
beyond
yeah,
the binary
happens during that time
highlighted
some
of the complexities and nuances and they contrast each other and they
is
contradict
very,
each
very
other.
Exhausting
so how do we negotiate
in the
that?
Sense that
because
there are a lot
I
of emotional
could probably tell you
that
a lot of the things we said were true,
are doing this
but they,
work.
They
and,
conflict
and
each
it's
other.
Not
they don't
easy
actually, so two things
call
can be
things
true
out
that actually
and then
don't
also
necessarily go
provide
together.
The support that are
context,
needed for that person
that's what
to
I thought
grow.
This conversation.
Because there are a lot of emotions that are tied into that experience. And so I just want to leave that, because I don't want to leave that piece unsaid. I think it's also very important.
These conversations
and
we
may not go into it as much today because there's so much research. There's so much data
teaching.
Surrounding
together,
the importance of rest
collaborative.
Exactly. When it comes
we'll
to this
time,
work that perhaps that's something that we can explore at a different time, but I also want to put out there in
like
this
that.
Episode because it is heavy content
sponsorship
that,
dollars are
that rest
in.
Is extremely important and it shouldn't be
no Pat that was so well said because I don't think we really addressed that at all that who are we putting us all, to inspire us all, and how disproportionate is it, and who are the same folks, and then it does become a nuanced conversation. You have to find sort of that sweet bliss, because at some point in my journey, I don't know enough, and I can't find the resource, I can't look up, I haven't found the story, I haven't found the clip, but I've invested the energies to try to, but at some point, I do need that expert lived experience, but you can't rush to that voice when you haven't put in the work yourself.
Right.
But how do we demonstrate that we've done that work? Because it's tough. No one has almost any idea the depth to what people are doing. And so it becomes difficult to negotiate. So I'm glad you just brought that theme up on completely, even and then coupled that with the rest that there are definitely folks that are being asked all the time, and perhaps they feel they just need to make people uncomfortable because that's where they're at in their journey.
That's right.
Because they've gone through so many things where they haven't seen the outcomes they want to see.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think this comes back to something you talked about. This is really a very personal journey, and we can't know what everyone is going through. And I think almost with performative, that's what we're getting to, is that performative and performance is a very individualized take on the word. And it becomes complex into how does performative action hurt or help the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for each individual, it can do one or the other.
That's right.
Not to make everything a binary relationship.
Right. It really is on a spectrum.
Right, Path.
A little bit of swag bag now?
Yeah, this episode was done in 22 minutes. I told you it would be fast.
You know what? I really, really valued this conversation because I think these are things that have been brewing in us for some time now. And I think we really needed this hour to hash it out and really, really talk about the things that we've had on our mind with this sort of intent and purpose. And so...
no answers per se.
No.
We descended to no mountaintop.
But I think that what we did was articulate things that were on our mind after we had processed them a little bit further. And I think that the conversation was really beneficial.
I think we went beyond the simplistic, beyond the binary, and highlighted some of the complexities and nuances. And they contrast each other. And they contradict each other. So how do we negotiate that? Because I could probably tell you a lot of the things we said were true, but they conflict each other. They don't actually, so two things can be true that actually don't necessarily go together in one context, but that's what I thought with this conversation. It was nuanced, it's complex, it's contrasting, and they conflict. So this is why the work is hard. Teachers talking, teaching. We grow together. It's collective and it's collaborative. We'll see you next time on episode 120 of the Air Fryer Show with Jay and Pat.
I like that.
Sponsorship dollars are starting to flow in.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Take care.
Bye.